Adam.
Evan, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Good.
Welcome to episode number 51 of Mythmakers.
Yes. We've crossed the half century. That's good.
Yes, exactly. Crossed the half century. I think it's, you know, in TV terms, getting to that 100th episode is the big milestone,
yes,
right?
It
so
is.
We've just crossed the midpoint.
Right,
to,
exactly.
to syndication dreams and podcasting.
Right.
So yes, welcome to Mythmakers. This is a show all about storytelling and the process power and those things around story and all the things that story does.
All the things. Yes, lots of things.
All the things.
All the things.
So I am Evan
Matthews. You sound like Donald Trump.
Yes.
This is all the things. It's good.
Yeah, I'm practicing for my political future.
When you ascend.
Yes. So I'm Evan Matthews.
I'm Adam Martin.
We have a company together called M2, which is doing all kinds of fun things in this realm of story, lots of which we talk about on this show.
Yes.
But we also like to just kind of talk about the aspects of storytelling that fascinate us, that interest us, and that we hope is helpful
and intriguing to other
people as well.
Exactly.
So, a little bit of background. Together, we have over 40 years of collective experience in making all sorts of media.
Yes.
So from animation and comics to film and television and everything in between.
Everything in between. Exactly.
We're going to talk tonight. Tonight's topic is going to be about pilots.
Yes.
So specifically television.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's some crossover, as there always is.
I think there is
other stuff that we play with as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's been one of those things we've realized over the years, especially as we've gotten the kind of comic production, really, obviously Back to Earth, and then with our own stuff, very specifically in comics. Just realizing the pilot format really does apply across genre, and you are across medium, I should say.
Yes.
So you really are looking to kind of check all the boxes that you would in a good television pilot, whether you are writing a series of shorts or you're writing a comic script or whatever else it might be.
Absolutely.
Your first act, your first episode, still has to hook people, give an idea what the story is, give an idea what the episodes are going to be, what is the overarching thing. Like, you've got to check all those boxes.
Absolutely. So we were just saying right before we started recording, so there's, in television, there's tends to be kind of two kind of broad
distinct
boxes or categories that things fall into.
Yes.
So what are those two categories?
Those two categories, typically speaking, so if you know, your first episode of a television tends to be one of two things. It is either the launch of this world specifically. So it is your Game of Thrones, a great example of that. I've maintained that the pilot of Game of Thrones, I thought, was spectacular.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
Drops you into this world. You don't really know what it is. It introduces the characters, but it does it. It's not telling you, because there is no typical Game of Thrones episode. It's like, okay, here's this slightly, here's something odd, but then you kind of forget about it, and then here are these characters, and here are the conflicts, and whatever else.
Yeah.
But it's very much a setting up of this world.
So who are the characters that are going to be important? What's the kind of general scene or scenario that people are dealing with? What are some of the major conflicts or things that people have to, you know, kind of deal with or contend with?
Well, it's interesting because I think that's distinct from, I think that applies to both categories.
Yes, true.
So I think, you know, you have, I think there are the terms of the kind of the broad strokes distinctions, they both have to achieve the same thing, but they go about it different ways.
Yes.
So there is the Game of Thrones, and I think any of the big serialized shows,
Breaking Bad,
this is what they have to do.
Absolutely.
You know, they have to just, here is the lead characters, here are obviously the conflicts that exist within it, which applies to both, but this is the story, this is the world in which we are telling our story, and then off we go.
Now, I would say,
would
you agree, though, I think there that in that setting, this is not across, I think it's a generalization because it's not true across the board, but I would say that, especially looking at like Game of Thrones or Breaking Bad or, you know, one of these big serialized shows, you're also kind of creating a very distinct sort of what's the big win or what's the big objective in a lot of cases. So like in Game of Thrones, like you very quickly establish like people want the throne or there's a power play dynamics around this thing that people want.
Yes.
In Breaking Bad, it's we don't know at all the twists and turns that we're going to take to get there, but we get the stakes right off the bat that, you know, here's Walter White, he's going to die, and in order
to take care of his family,
he's going to start
embark on this quest. Exactly.
So it's, you know, sort of creating a scenario that then has to play out over a long period
exactly.
of time.
Yes, with whatever twists and turns may obviously yeah. follow, but exactly, yeah. exactly. And then that is distinct from, I think, the more kind of procedural versions, at least, where it's, here is this episode of television. Here is what each episode of this is going to be.
Yeah.
And so obviously your kind of CSIs and your NCISs on the drama end, mm-hmm. and, you know, the vast majority of comedies,
yeah.
it is, here's this situation. Each episode we are going to have these characters deal with A problem and mm-hmm. then B problem, and then they're going to resolve it in this way come the end.
Right.
And
with, it's like a template for, exactly. like, you can kind of expect each episode to follow this particular format.
More or less
format.
Follow this thing. Yes.
And by the end of it, we'll have some sort of resolution, and then next time we're going to do it again.
We're going to do it again. Yeah. Exactly. And again, so your kind of more procedural dramas, you know your procedurals fall into that
yeah.
absolutely rigidly. Here's the case, here's the characters, and here, you know, and it's, you know, your Law and Orders, it's like, great, right. your cold open, here it always ends on the pithy kind of end, you know, one-liner,
yeah.
and then boom, boom, you have your first credit,
right.
and then you're into your up and running, and you know the beats of each thing is going to happen. You know,
yes.
by the end of Act 1, there's going to be in this place, and then the end of Act 2, they have gone off down the wrong way, and they realize they failed.
Yes.
Act 3, there's another false lead, but it's connected, and then it all ties itself.
And then by the end, you know that the second person they interviewed was the person that did it.
Yes. Yes. Without fail.
Bum, bum.
Every single time. Yes. Bum, bum. Pithy, pithy final line, and we're out.
Yes.
Now, none of that is to criticize Law & Order. It's
yes.
still going. What's it? Season 20 or
something
20 plus?
Like that.
It's
yes.
insane. I
yes.
mean, it's amazing. And still well written, still well
yep.
acted. It's, none of this is to demean the
mm-hmm.
quality of what is being
yeah.
produced. It's just distinct type.
Or, you know, you mentioned, I think it was two great examples, you know, Smallville and My Name is Earl,
yes.
where, you know, you immediately come in and say, like, here's this list of things or this
yes.
grouping of things that we're going to deal with. And, you know, one of those things is going to be the focus of each episode.
Exactly.
Each time. Yeah.
Yes, so it's, and then I think you can also obviously have hybrid shows, and I think you look at the Dexter pilot as
mm-hmm.
a perfect example of
yes.
that.
Yeah.
Where you absolutely have the setup of this world.
Yeah.
But it's this combination, you know, Dexter I think walked the line very well
yeah.
of kind of, it was, you know, a hybrid
mm-hmm.
procedural versus serialized
mm-hmm.
show. And just to be clear, sorry, a serialized show is a Game of Thrones. It's
yes.
where you cannot drop in and watch an episode. You have to know what's going on.
Yes.
Your procedural shows are your big, you know, mostly your cop shows, your big hit comedies. I think
you generally drop into any episode.
You can drop in any episode
in any
and
order.
Be,
yeah.
and, you know, I think the majority, funnily enough, of hit shows, I think, are procedurals, not serialized,
mm-hmm.
with obviously big notable exceptions like
yep.
Thrones, like Breaking Bad,
I mean, I think
like
that,
Walking Dead.
To me, that
you know.
That wheel has turned a little bit in
mm-hmm.
the with the rise of, you know, kind of cable being such a prominent
yes.
you know, portion of the television landscape. But certainly the vast majority, if not all, of the network shows are more in that other side
more
of
in
things,
that world.
More in the
yes.
more in the procedural side of things.
Or they're juggling, they're doing a balance like
right.
Dexter, which mm-hmm. is, you know, in Dexter, the Dexter pilot is fantastic.
Yeah, it
season
is.
One
it's
of Dexter
fantastic.
Is think,
yeah.
one of the best seasons of television ever.
Cat.
Oh, hello, Cat. Sorry, Cat has woken up.
Our third co-star is back again. Yes.
His presence. Thank you, Bagheera. Yes. You know, what Dexter did so well was set up, all right, here's a serial killer, he works in the police
mm-hmm.
department, here is the serialized element to this thing,
yep.
which is there is now a new serial killer on the block, and because he's involved with forensics, he's going to be exploring and trying to catch this killer,
yes.
and obviously the finale, the final scene is him finding the little body in the freezer,
yeah.
so it's, he's being invited to play a game of cat
yes.
and mouse with this
yes.
killer.
Yes.
And he is also going to have this procedural element each week, where he, Dexter, is going to be trying
taking
to set out
someone
to kill
out.
This
yes.
person.
Yeah.
And most of the times he succeeds in doing
mm-hmm.
that, some of the times he doesn't.
Yes.
But it is, you know, he has both the overarching story and then these...
The kill of the week. Yeah.
Which is going to be
mm-hmm.
his thing.
Yeah.
And I think we've actually taken that as a model for a couple of our shows.
Absolutely.
Obviously Crossing
yeah.
Guard being the big one.
Yeah.
Where it is very much, you know, Crossing Guard's a story we've had kicking around for a while and we're in production of Comic-Con where
yeah.
a woman who... Yeah, accidentally kills Death and then has to assume that mantle.
Yes.
And our idea is that we would have a kind of kill of the week, mm-hmm. that she is then kind of having to fulfill this role, her duties in this way.
Yeah.
And then an overarching story where she's got lots of other stuff going on.
I mean, actually, that was I had forgotten, but the that Dexter format also was very influential on our first kind of thinking about the Dead Town show as well. So when we wrote the Dead Town pilot, it also had a sort of case of the week element with this much bigger kind of serialized kind of meta story over the top of it as well.
Right. Yeah. And I think something, and again, you look at something like Mad Men, which is again a bit of a hybrid, but mm-hmm. actually the pilot is not set up mm-hmm. in a serialized way at all, really. Mm-hmm. It's very much, you're dropped in, and here's this chap, and he's an ad exec, and he has to work out, he's at a loss about how to advertise the new brand of cigarettes, because they can't claim that they're healthy for you anymore,
right.
And how do you sell cigarettes without this?
Yes.
And so he's at a loss, and they've got to make a big presentation in 2 days' time, and he's seeing his mistress, and he's seeing his wife, and there's the new girl in the office.
Yeah.
So you're setting up the world very effectively, but it's all wrapped around, here's this problem our lead has to solve.
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I think obviously works incredibly well in that way. It's funny, I was never actually a huge Mad Men mm-hmm. fan, but the pilot's exceptional,
it's great.
And you totally understand why it got picked up and why it did what it did.
Yes.
And it's a really good show.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah, that shouldn't come as a surprise.
Yes, not as a surprise at all. It's a phenomenal show. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it's been interesting in our own experience. I think we look back at the first pilot we wrote, which mm-hmm. was Dead Town.
Yeah,
and we kind of charged off on that without really doing any research about what a pilot should be.
Yes.
And we essentially wrote, one of our friends, you know, who is a showrunner on numerous shows and read it and gave us notes back and said, tonally it's great, but what you've got is the first half of a movie. You don't have a pilot.
Yes.
We're like, oh, really? What do you need for a pilot? Well,
having only written film scripts to that point,
exactly.
Makes sense.
Makes total sense. And so that, you know, that was a huge eye-opener, and then we went back and rebroke it in the flyback structure in terms of, great, what are the beats you have to be hitting? How do you set this world up?
Yeah.
What are the important elements that you've got to introduce through this?
Yes.
How do you make it act like any story should be, obviously? How do you make it actor-driven, not event-driven?
Yes.
So that the main character is leading you through this world and introducing you to it while solving his crime, while exploring, while mm-hmm. doing whatever else he needs to be doing,
yes.
he or she needs to be doing. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, I do remember that very clearly, because it was it was an eye-opener. And then after that, we went into just a kind of reading binge of pilots, which was fantastic.
Yes.
And reading all the different ones. So there was the Smallville pilot being particularly good. And
absolutely.
I think, Miles and Al are old and good friends and the creators of that, and talking to them about that, but really seeing how cleverly and how precisely they laid out this world and how they conveyed everything you could want about what this is, and had their wall of weird, and mm-hmm. you realize what the show is going to be, and it's very, very well structured, well crafted pilot.
I
understand why it went on to be the hit that it was.
And I still contend that both from a kind of a study of how to write a pilot, mm-hmm. and also for me specifically, like the way that it's laid out on the page, the way that they choose language and words, the structure of the sentences, like, to me, is still one of the best that I've ever
flawless.
Read.
Flawless. Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's funny because they did the same thing with the Charlie's Angels pilot they did, that ended the show, ended up flopping.
Mm-hmm.
But the pilot on the page was perfect.
Fantastic.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is. It's funny. It's little rules. It's mm-hmm. like not having... Now, here's the thing. It's one of the rules we like.
Mm-hmm.
Is not having any chunk of description be... Really, Kat? Really. Not having any chunk of description be more than 3 lines.
Yes.
Not having runaway sentences. Being as kind of pithy and concise as you can
mm-hmm.
with your descriptions.
Yes.
With you. Everything is kind of honed to the nth degree. Now, interestingly enough, like in Alan Ball, because we read the True Blood mm-hmm. pilot at the same time, Alan Ball, the first page of the pilot is description.
Yes.
And it's the song they're in, and it's the setting, it's the bar that they're going into, and we meet mm-hmm. our heroine, and they describe her. Obviously written before Anna Paquin was involved with the project.
Yes.
But you've got such detail
mm-hmm.
in the in the description.
Yes, and also a great pilot. So I think one of the lessons from reading really good pilots is that there actually is a lot of leeway in how one constructs the specific presentation of this world. And so I think part of it, like all sort of creative exercises, like you find the thing that resonates with your voice and the way that you like to write and tell stories. And it's like you can find your own kind of way of presenting this world, presenting this information. And there can be, a wide variety of ways to do that. But at the end of the day, you're trying to bring the reader into this place. You're trying to bring them into the show, essentially. Yes. And I think the ones that at least I have felt have been the best are the ones where, I think actually in both of those cases, very successfully, while being very different, by, page three, it's like you kind of even forget that you're reading and you're just kind of in it.
Yes.
To me, kind of the mark of those that really work kind of is that experience. It's like Absolutely. You can even kind of see the show while you're reading the pilot.
Exactly. And that is very much obviously the purpose of a pilot. Yeah. Because, at each step of this way, there are going to be gatekeepers. And until you are an Alan Ball or whoever it might be, you've got to get through the agent and then you've got to get to the junior exec and then you've got to get to the senior exec. And at each step of the way, they are looking for reasons to say no.
Yes.
And so the fewer reason, those reasons you can give them, the further you go. And that's still ultimately, each network buys 100 or so pilots a year and they make about 10 and then they pick up 3 or 4 to series, and then maybe one of those gets a season 2.
Yeah.
It's an incredible funnel.
Yes.
But you've got to make sure your pilot is structured in such a way to get through those gatekeepers.
Yeah.
And is bringing the reader in, typically speaking, by 3 pages in, you want to have hooked people.
Yes.
Because they want to turn that 4th page. Mm-hmm. If you haven't done it by page 3, you're probably not going to get a page 4.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I would, bringing it back to us, and also, just to kind of then bridge into some other formats. So I think, one of the things I think, has worked very well, like if you look at the first episode of the Deadtown Macroverse series, one of the choices that we made early on in kind of figuring out how that was going to work and how that was going to play is that, you'll notice if you read the 8 episodes that are up on the app right now, like, all of the scenes are from our protagonist's point of view, and every part of it that you explore is only when Chan, the main character, comes to this part of the world, except for the very first scene,
the cold open,
which is the cold open, which tells you a lot about where you are, what are the rules of this thing, how does this function, what is this thing and place that we're going to be now living in.
Yes.
And so we spend the first scene, the first sequence, kind of doing the setup, and then the rest of it is all from the point of view of our main character. And I think that was an intentional kind of break of the rule that we set up for ourselves to kind of quickly establish this setting and this scenario.
And it's a break of the rule. It does still, the cold open does still directly apply to the story. So you do meet your second lead in this thing.
Yeah.
You don't know it at the time, and then she disappears for the rest of that episode and on into the next one.
Yeah.
I think the Game of Thrones does the same thing very, very effectively.
Yeah.
Where you start up at the wall with these people going out and you meet a White Walker, you meet some zombies, you get something scary as hell is going on.
Yes.
And then you drop it.
Yeah.
And then you hear the wall talked about, but you don't go back there for 4 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well.
And you don't see another Walker for 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really gets dropped. And I think it's one of those things one of the many things that I loved about Game of Thrones, especially season 1, was you have this supernatural hit at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then you lose the supernatural, and the next time you see it is Arya chasing cats through King's Landing.
That's right.
And she runs through this room full of dragon skulls.
Yes.
And you're like,
whoa.
Oh, shit. Hang on a second. Like, this is something weird. This is something, there's something bigger and stranger. And obviously it goes on from there.
Yeah.
But it's, I love that because you have this creepy supernatural thing and then it goes totally grounded.
Yes.
For the next 5 episodes.
Yeah.
You're in this essentially medieval England world.
Yes.
And then it gets weird again.
Yes, absolutely.
In the best possible way, mm-hmm. you know.
Absolutely. And then, you know, as another example that, you know, we've mentioned before, we're working on a bunch of stuff for the Yarn platform. And I think the slight wrinkle there is that, you know, there's actually actually not so dissimilar from a traditional TV pilot in the sense that there's a pretty established format for, you know, what a first episode of a Yarn series yes. is. So, you know, there's some sort of general rules about, you know, length and structure and kind of where some of the beats need to fall or a general vicinity where some of the beats need to fall. And at the same time, I think, you know, what we've been able to do with these various series that we're working on is think about it actually very much in TV terms of like, absolutely. How do we, you know, set up the world, set up the main characters, kind of bring you into an interesting scenario
yes.
that's then going to play out over the course of multiple episodes.
Exactly.
And so it's, you know, as we always talk about in these shows, it's like, you know, you can take these kind of fundamental elements and apply them to a bunch of different things. But I think something about TV pilots in particular, to me, there is something special in the study of that, in that it is such a masterclass in those elements. And like, you know, how do you quickly and efficiently create this playground for the rest of something that's going to unfold, or
exactly.
you know, or in the case of it being more of a template, you know, show that, you know, you're telling. Excuse me, you're kind of telling the audience what to expect
exactly.
on an episode or weekly, you know, basis.
Yes. And it was funny because if you remember this, the very first pilot we wrote for Dead Town,
mm-hmm.
and then we actually took out and a few people read, and yeah. one of the comments was the opening scene of that was actually took place in a graveyard.
Yes.
If you remember, and it was this kind of old woman being interred yeah. and there's yeah. a priest there yeah. and it's all a bit strange, but it's this graveyard
yeah.
scene. And then they put it in the ground and then they kind of chop her head off and nail her to the coffin.
Yes.
And it's like, holy shit. You know, it was actually a really good opening scene.
Yeah.
But the major criticism was it doesn't tie into the rest of the story.
Yeah.
So yes, you get this world glimpse,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't tie in
yes.
to anything else, anybody
yeah.
else that is playing out.
Yeah.
And it should do.
Yeah.
And that was yeah, so we got something right, and then we also got the format wrong.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very good. So if anyone, I think actually if you're interested in creating, you know, kind of story content in general, reading TV pilots is a great
of
reference. And then especially if you're interested in writing
And there is
TV,
a ton of them available up online.
Yeah.
Pilotscripts, tvscripts.com.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes.
Because there was one specifically where, you know, obviously, yeah, we get given pilots because we can reach out to people and say, hey, can I read your pilot? And they say yes. But there's a ton of this stuff available totally for free up online.
Absolutely.
And it is by far the best way to read, you know, to go by reading them.
Yeah.
It's just, you just read a bunch of these things.
Yep.
And then, like, we went on a reading binge, and then we would watch the episodes afterwards.
Yep.
And then we would break down how they worked and what was working and what wasn't. And,
yeah.
And it's also useful then to read. It's actually a great book. And it's funny, it's disappeared. But it was one of the early screenwriting books I wrote, just called Good Scripts, Bad Scripts.
Mm.
And
that you read.
That I read.
Yes.
That I read. What did I say?
You said that you wrote.
And that I wrote. Oh, God, I'm sorry. No, I did not write that. I wish I wrote that. But it was like, it was the first screenwriting book that I read. And it was. It wasn't technique, it wasn't anything. It just took, I think it was like 20 movies, 10 good ones, 10 bad ones, and talked about the scripts and why they worked and why they didn't, and took some ones like Usual Suspects. So this is a great movie and a great script, and there are gigantic plot holes in here that actually would have sunk a lesser film.
Yes.
You know, and then I can't remember, you know, obviously Godfather, they talked about a lot of the classics,
yeah.
and then I can't remember what the bad ones were.
That's telling in and of itself.
It's telling, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was very much, you know, it's very much that thing of, great, go and look at the ones that succeed.
Yes.
And then go and find ones that lasted a season or half a season.
Or an episode.
An episode or two. Or, you know, whatever it is, go and read those as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can squirrel out those parts, those can be harder to come by.
Mm-hmm.
But go and squirrel those out and see why they didn't make it. Because, you know, some of the times there are great projects that disappear, but having done a lot of pilots over as an AD of my life, I think most of the ones I've done, you see pretty quickly why doesn't work, and you see the problems as you go into it.
Yes.
And now having this show, Black Monday, that's now coming up, is going into production on Showtime, from the first read of the pilot, this is amazing. It's just great stuff.
Yeah.
And now having seen that cut and having now go into the rest of the season, it holds up every bit plus on screen that it did on the printed page, and you can totally understand why it's going to series, and it's very gratifying. It's a lot of fun to have kind of seen it go from pilot now to series.
Yeah.
And I think it's obviously not always the case, but a lot of the other pilots done over the years, you can see why that
didn't.
Maybe didn't. You know, not always. Because I've still done those pilots, though. I were fantastic.
And
the first one I did as a first ED a couple of years ago, I loved it. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, ABC didn't want it.
Yeah.
So you can't, you know, quality is no guarantee of success.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of the time you can see those connections.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. So go read some pilots.
Yes, exactly.
Well worth the investment.
Exactly. No, and that was the thing. I remember it's like, you know, you download these things and you have them on your iPad or your Kindle or whatever it is. And so that becomes your kind of bedtime reading.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
And it's great.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
100%.
Yes.
Yes. So, Adam, what is your Hujama flip this week? And by the way, is a Hujama flip?
I think you should explain Hujama flip this time.
It's true.
I think so. It's a very British. Well, not
I like to call it. It's an Adam term, but I like to call it the British whatchamacallit.
Yes.
We were just chatting one night, and Adam said the term Hujama flip, and then it became our thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So we defined it as, you know, kind of top of mind.
Exactly.
What have you been thinking about? What have you been consuming mostly?
Yes.
Over the past week. So I'll just say mine for the past week, and I only have one. I know it's a rarity, which is no pun intended for what I'm about to talk about. What's that?
Rare steaks?
Yes, rare steaks. Trump steaks.
Yes, good.
super rare. We are about to launch a bunch of art on a brand new platform called Rare Art.
Ooh.
And so this, you know, we got exposed through a couple of different projects to this whole, you know, cryptocurrency, blockchain, you know, world of things that's happening out there. And it's become a slight fascination point for me and for us. And so, you know, we've got some of our own kind of entrepreneurial ideas around what one might do with blockchain and crypto. But it's also just been really interesting to see what other people are doing with it. And an illustrator that I'm acquainted with named Brian Romero has been very bullish on crypto and blockchain. And so I happened to see him post something about this. And then I fired off an email to the guys that have created it. And here we are about a few days away from launching our own stuff on their platform. So what Rare Art is, and I believe I'll put the link in the show notes as well, but I believe it's it's either rareart.io or just rare.io. But they have created a platform on blockchain which allows for digital collectability for art, essentially.
Yes.
And this is a particular area of interest and fascination for me and for us as it relates to our comics platform and some ideas that we have around that. But the basic concept, you know, for anyone that hasn't been following this, is that, you know, Bitcoin is sort of the most famous, you know, cryptocurrency at this point. And most people know that there's something out there called Bitcoin.
Yep.
The technology that allows things like Bitcoin to exist is this sort of underlying concept of a blockchain. And what that actually is just a distributed network of computers that creates a big digital verifiable ledger. Which is very hard, if not impossible, to fake. So essentially, if I have a Bitcoin, there's, you know, thousands, if not millions, of computers around the world that are all decentralized, validating the fact that I own that literally on a millisecond to, you know, second to second basis. So if I then give that or sell that or trade that Bitcoin to Adam, all of those machines around the world now know that he owns it. And so it's this sort of decentralized ledger that verifies ownership.
Right.
And it's something that, you know, works in a way that is very difficult, if not impossible, to hack. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to change or to fake. Mm-hmm. So it's this, you know, kind of true ownership in the digital world. And so what Rare is doing is applying that
true ownership of a unique
Item.
Exactly.
And so, you know, what that allows for is, you know, essentially true collectability of digital files. And so what Rare is doing is applying that to specifically art. And so they've, you know, brought on a bunch of different fine artists and digital artists and, you know, different people doing the type of work that they do, but now allowing you to take what you would have essentially been able to create a million, billion copies of and create a limited edition that is verifiably limited. Right. So, you know, you could, of course, send an email of a particular, you know, JPEG or PSD or something to someone, and anyone could copy that and send it to anyone else. And, you know, you could have, you know, endless numbers of those running exactly. around the internet. But as soon as you attach it to the blockchain, then these 10 copies, for example, are verifiably unique to yes. individual owners. And so what we pitched them and brought to them was, you know, yes, we, you know, we've created a lot of different art for a lot of different projects. You know, I myself have an mm-hmm. illustration background. And so what we thought would be interesting to kind of tweak what they're doing a little bit is to bring some of our projects into this world. And so you'll see launching on there, you know, some special versions of some of the Dead Town work, some of my own illustration work, and then a hand-picked selection of things from projects that we've done over the years and have taken those and created kind of special versions of them, which will only be on Rare.
So unique in this to this.
Exactly. Platform. So for example, you know, we created a whole series of character posters as promos for Dead Town. So kind of taking key character art from the series and kind of creating a you know, poster version of that. And we've used that on social media and in other ways to promote the Macroverse series. And so then we've taken those and applied a layer of animation to them to then put them onto Rare. So these are, you know, so there's a, you know, most of these are limited to kind of 10 to 15 copies. And then you use a cryptocurrency. It's not Bitcoin, it's Ether. So this runs on the Ethereum network, which is another flavor of blockchain.
Yeah.
And so then that creates a value proposition for owning, you know, this kind of unique piece of collectible art. So, it's a lot to kind of dig into if you're just kind of learning about blockchain and crypto, but it's a really interesting kind of new frontier, and there's a lot of investment going into this world. There's a lot of innovation happening in the world, and it'll be a fun experiment to kind of see what happens with over the next, you know, couple of weeks and months.
Exactly.
So I'm excited about it, and we'll have more to say about it as it unfolds.
As it progresses, exactly. Obviously, we'll let everyone know once it's up.
Yes, exactly. And where you can go drop some ether and collect some. Yes.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's very cool. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. So that is my Hujma flip for the week.
Yes, very, very good.
Yes.
Mine is far more trivial. My son and I, and then Evan tonight, rewatching Rogue One.
Yes.
At his suggestion. I haven't seen that in a couple of years. And it was fascinating watching it, especially, and to me this is the thing, especially in comparison to Han to Solo.
Yes.
Where Rogue One works on every level.
Yeah.
It works so well, and you care about these characters, and you like what they're doing, and you feel the deaths at the end, and you all those things. That where it succeeds, where Han Solo systematically did not.
Yes.
And it's obviously, especially the one that jumps out, is the kind of K2 death as he's talking to them, protecting them at the end.
The robot, yeah.
The robot. And it's genuinely painful. You're genuinely sad. It's a wonderful kind of death scene that this robot gets.
Mm-hmm.
And it's terrific.
Yeah.
And it's in stark contrast to the completely useless robot death that happens As the robot launches the rebellion on a slave planet and releases
the robot rebellion, yes.
The robot rebellion. But no, but I think, isn't the implication
it
that
does
that's
start
the rebellion?
Well, it starts a rebellion. Yeah, sort of.
Right? It
starts
kind of spills over.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, the one saving grace there is that you see R2-D2 wandering around the background, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this robot is then kind of releasing his mechanical brothers and sisters and... and then gets killed during the process.
And you just don't care.
And you just don't care. Yeah. And it's set up as this kind of, meant to be this kind of tragic war zone thing.
Yeah.
And just falls flat in his face.
Yeah,
like
really
so
does.
Much about yeah. that movie. It just, you just don't care.
Yeah.
And I think it comes back to a point that I made when we talked about Solo, which is, you know, one of the reasons Solo doesn't work, and I think prequels in general don't work, is because there's very little, the stakes are almost non-existent,
mm-hmm.
because you know these characters survive.
Yes.
What was great about Rogue One is you don't know that these characters survive because they don't appear in the main stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so as they all start to get wiped out, each of those deaths is actually shocking and painful, and you're not quite sure what's going to come next.
Yeah.
And when they all ultimately die... it's a genuinely kind of painful thing. And you still get the fun of it setting up the greater universe.
Yeah.
It's the Death Star plans. Mm-hmm. And it obviously ties in so... Like, that last 3 minutes with the chase, with
phenomenal.
Darth Vader coming
yeah.
on board, with Leia escaping and all...
Yeah.
Is just
it's
magical
great.
And
yeah.
makes the hairs on my neck stand
yes.
up. It's,
yes.
it's great. And just works so well.
Yeah.
In a way that I think... Solo obviously totally failed,
yeah.
but actually thinking about it, as much as I would love to see a Boba Fett movie or
mm-hmm.
an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie,
yeah.
it won't have that same
mm-hmm.
peril. It won't
yeah.
have the stakes.
Yeah.
And I think is a would actually, seeing it again, they got something right here that they desperately need to recreate. And
yes.
there are other elements and sidelines that you can find within the Star Wars universe.
Oh, tons.
But, you know,
yes.
a myriad.
Mm-hmm.
Go and explore those. Don't
yes.
give us... our lead characters. Don't give yeah. us these people that we know and care about.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I completely agree. The other thing that struck me seeing it again, it struck me the first time I saw it and every time I see it, but, you know, it's been a couple years since I've watched it too, and it just, again, hit me watching it this evening that, you know, you know, not only does the story and the character and the stakes and all of that work and, you know, such a worthy entry in the canon
yes.
in general, but I also think there is something about the production design in general which is so pitch perfect that it just feels like Star Wars. And it's
yes.
you know, it's you know, again, in a way that, you know, Solo was, you know, meant to be, you know, actually taking place even before Rogue One.
Oh yeah, by quite a long way.
It doesn't feel like it's happening in an earlier time, like
yes.
the way that the even just the ships look and the sets look and the lighting
yes.
and the effects and the
technology.
Well,
it was
technology
one of the big issues
and,
with the prequels was the
yeah.
technology and the sleekness of the
mm-hmm.
prequels. You didn't buy that they were then going to actually degenerate into
right.
what we saw in Star Wars.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, so I think, you know, and one of the things that, you know, just it's the perfect balance to me in that, you know, it's like I 100% believe that Rogue One happens, you know, 5 seconds before A New Hope, because it looks and it feels and it acts
exactly
like you expect Star Wars to look and feel and act. And it's like, you know, the way that the space battles are shot and the types of, you know,
yep.
the selection of, you know, how that is all constructed. To me, the ships and the technology in particular, but especially the ships and space battle stuff, it's like, you can obviously tell that they've used, you know, CG to create these things,
yes.
but they still have the feeling of, you know, the models that were used in the original Star Wars. And so it just that all of that is so pitch perfect that it just 100%, you know, brings you right back into that world,
exactly.
right back into that feeling.
Exactly.
And
that also is obviously very consciously, I mean, you revolve around the Death Star,
yeah.
but it's the choice of shots for
yep.
ramping up the Death Star. It's
yep.
the uniforms. It's all those
yep.
things. The only thing they get wrong is Darth Vader's uniform, which
yes.
is slightly annoying.
Which is weird,
but
yes. Yes. There's something off about the ratio of mask to helmet.
He's
to,
too big. He's
yeah.
too heavy. He looks like a bodybuilder
yeah.
underneath there.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously David Prowse in the original doesn't. He's yep. tall and imposing.
Yes.
But he's not stocky in the
but
way.
But I also swear, like, this is my one criticism, and it bumped me a little bit in the theater too, where it's like, you know, there's something even about the way that his helmet fits on this actor's body, which is different. Mm-hmm. And I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's like the way it almost feels like they bought this costume from a costume shop as opposed to, like, you know, brought it off the shelf from the archives.
Right. It's
interesting. And I'm not quite sure how they got everything else so right. And that one element just not quite
just off.
Yeah, it's odd.
We were saying, though, it's not the first time, because the Darth Vader's helmet in Empire Strikes Back,
yes,
when he's talking to Luke, having cut his hand off, and in the wind, you see his helmet go,
like,
moving. And it doesn't just really distract from the scene, but it's just every now and then, like, hell, wait a second.
Yes, yes.
Should be nailed slightly.
Yes, indeed. But other than that,
oh, no.
Wonderful.
It's just spectacular.
Absolutely wonderful.
It's a bit of a throwback, obviously, but it was just funny. It was kind of very much top of mind having just seen it again.
Yeah.
And then the discussion about Solo afterwards with the kids was just interesting.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So, to wrap it up, a couple of announcements of things and places that you can find more of what we've been working on.
Yep.
So, Dead Town, lots of Dead Town.
Yes.
Episodes 1 through 8 are live and free on the Macroverse app.
Yep.
We've mentioned, I believe, that all of the art has now been completed for episode 9, which is getting into production to go up and live shortly as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't grabbed that yet, go and find the Macroverse app on the App Store for iOS or for Android.
Yep.
Free download, free episodes,
and
let
great.
Us know what you think.
Yep.
We're very proud of it.
Yes.
Shout out to Stephen Perkins, who does all the
Always.
Art. He's phenomenal.
Yes.
And then also Dead Town.
He's above average.
Yeah, very much above average. And then Dead Town Breakout, which is the prequel series to that Macroverse series, is up on the Yarn platform.
Indeed.
So that is an app called Yarn. You can find that also on iOS or Android.
Seasons we'll 1 and 2 are live now. Three and four shortly.
Coming in early September.
Yes.
And so actually Steven is finishing up the art for season 4 right now.
Very cool.
And it all looks great as well.
Yes.
So we're very proud of that as well. And that will, season 4 will complete that story arc.
Yes.
And then
and
have,
Will does tie into the comic script.
It does tie
subtly,
in. It does. There's some great Easter eggs for those who are paying attention and who like to dig into that kind of stuff.
Yes. Which would be us, because
which
we're
would
geeks.
Definitely be
love
us.
That stuff.
So lots of Dead Town going on. We're writing and writing and writing and story breaking and pre-production and beginning to prep for this next round of Yarn stuff that we're working on.
Very, very cool.
So more to say about that soon. You can find us all over social media at
M2Action.
So at M2Action. We're most active on Instagram these days, but we're pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
If you like this show, please
rate it, review it, tell
a friend.
Please.
It makes a huge difference. Those ratings and reviews actually make a huge difference for people being able to find the show.
Right, exactly.
It has an oversized impact on what Apple in particular puts in front of people. So that would be phenomenal. And then finally, we always like to just give a little shout out to Brandon Weisel, who does the intro and outro for these episodes.
I was singing it initially. and it was by democratic consent decided that was inappropriate for the gravity of the show.
I don't know if democratic consent is really accurate, since I just said, Brandon, can you put something together for us for this show?
So,
and he was
dear
like,
God,
here
please
you go.
Stop Adam singing, I think was the message,
the direct
behind
quote.
That.
But yes. So find us all of those places. We also do a very infrequent, but we hope interesting newsletter, which we would love for you to subscribe to. So you can find that on our website at m2.ninja. We also like to include some extra goodies in there, which we don't put other places. So that will be, and actually I think there will be more of those extra goodies coming as more and more stuff gets kicked off. And with that, we'll be back next week for episode 52, which is a
annual
milestone episode. We'll have to come up with something special and fun for 52.
Yes.
So come back next week to find out what that is. Well, for sure.
Yes.
We'll both be singing.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. Didn't let that put you off. It'd be great.
Yes. Come back. We'll talk to you then.
All right. Bye.
Good night.